Welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I am your host, Ramita Iyer, a research analyst at the Institute. On 31st March 2023, Indian Minister of Commerce Piyush Goyal announced the country's latest foreign trade policy, the FTP 2023. This policy replaces the previous FTP 2015 to 2020, which had to be extended several times due to the pandemic and other geopolitical developments. In this episode, I will be discussing this year's policy and its implications with Ms. R.V. Anuradha, partner Claris Law Associates, New Delhi. Anuradha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So to start off, could you share on what a foreign trade policy is? What are its aims and how does it guide India's trade-related decisions?
Thanks, Ramita. The foreign trade policy, unlike just being an overall policy document or a vision document, is actually a policy that the government is mandated to enact pursuant to what is called the Foreign Trade Development and Regulation Act. So since the objective of the policy itself arises from an existing law, the policy in itself is more about implementation rather than about vision setting. The primary difference, however, in the FTP 2023, and that's what has also created a fair amount of excitement, is that unlike previous foreign trade policies, which were typically, you know, staid narration of incentives that are available, what sort of forms and procedures that will have to be followed by exporters and importers, what incentives would be available. Other than, you know, listing this out, the policy in itself provides a bit of policy signaling in terms of what is the government's vision on how India can enhance its exports and benefit from trade as a vehicle for economic growth. And this is where there is a significant difference in the current foreign trade policy as compared to the previous year's foreign trade policy.
Moving on now to some key features of this year's FTP, I'd first like to focus on trade facilitation and digitalization, where digitalizing processes, particularly for documents and invoicing, has been identified as the key enabler to better facilitate trade. Given that the current government's focus is on the digital aspect, how does this connect to India's recent heavy engagement in FTAs?
Again, the point that you raised, Namita, actually ties in very well with what I mentioned as the vision of the government in terms of where does it see foreign trade policy actually moving towards. So there's an entire chapter dedicated to facilitating, promoting digital trade. There is also a chapter focused on creation of e-commerce export hubs. And both of these together really present a vision in terms of how to enhance or how to facilitate digital trade and enhance India's ability in this area. But these are also areas which are setting forth broad objectives, and how the government enables implementation will actually remain to be seen in terms of specific initiatives that will need to be put in place. Let's take the example of the point that you mentioned in terms of the digitalization of the economy of through trade facilitation for digital trade. So there's an entire chapter in the foreign trade policy titled Promoting Cross-Border Trade in Digital Economy, and it lays down objectives such as creation of e-commerce platforms, which will enable the commercial process of buying and selling of both goods and services on the internet. It talks about facilitating e-commerce export logistics providers, which are essentially service providers that will provide logistics support for these e-commerce platforms. And then it talks about using existing schemes. There is something called the Niryat Bandhu scheme that the Director General of Foreign Trade had put in place several years back, which has been one of the primary vehicles and tools for training, capacity building for exporters. The Nirjat Bandhu scheme, as it is called, Nirjat in Hindi essentially means export. And Bandhu is friend, so a friend to the exporter scheme, so to speak, essentially has now been extended for promoting e-commerce and other emerging channels of e-commerce. There is also talk about having awareness related to various rules and various procedural aspects relating to e-commerce related activities. Another interesting feature of that chapter is the creation of e-commerce export hubs, which will act as a center for favorable business infrastructure and facilities. Now, if we actually look at all of this, they are signaling the government's commitment towards digitalization and trade facilitation. But as I mentioned, this objective now needs to be translated to actual action points by the Director General of Foreign Trade, by other wings of the central government, in order to actually enable the realization of the benefits that this vision statement puts forward.
So other key highlights of the FTP include its focus on encouraging grassroots exports, setting up e-commerce export hubs, and increasing the acceptance of Indian rupee payments. Could you share your thoughts on these aspects and how are they likely to benefit India, especially the Indian MSMEs?
So with regard to, when I mentioned in the beginning in terms of vision setting and the policy statement from the government, other than the issue of digitalization and e-commerce exports that we just discussed, one of the other areas that it talks about is a good way of putting it is a decentralized or a bottom-up approach for export development. And this is the first time we are seeing it in any government policy, where the government talks about actually enabling districts in India. Again, for a non-Indian to explain what this is all about, we have a federal structure. We have the center, then we have the states in India, the union territories, and every state is divided into districts. Or provinces, as an alternative terminology. So the government has envisaged creation of districts as export hubs, and in what it calls the District Export Hubs Initiative, and then places the onus on each district to come up with a district export plan, whereby they would identify what is a good or a service amenable for export, which needs the benefits of the foreign trade policy. And then makes a potential accessibility for these identified goods and services to existing government schemes for facilitating exports. So we have something called the Market Access Initiative, and of course I've mentioned the Nirjat Bandhu scheme. So between these two initiatives, the idea is that every district export action plan would identify the nature of goods and services from that district for which a MAI or the Market Access Initiative or the Nirjat Bandhu scheme benefits could be available, could be accessible. And then it places, consolidates it one step further by placing the onus on the state government. So the state government will then need to consolidate the district export action plans and then facilitate it in terms of communicating this to the central government. The state export promotion committees, which would be headed by the chief secretary of each state, would be required to synergize these efforts with the central level. At the central level, we have the Director General of Foreign Trade. So this, again, this sort of a vision in terms of a bottom-up approach has tremendous potential in terms of how it can actually facilitate access for niche product categories for export. The actual implementation of this, again, as I mentioned, will need to be rolled out. And it will be the first time in terms of how this will actually lead up to the overall export development of the country. You mentioned MSMEs. Again, this is an area where there are several incentives that have been specified in the overall vision of the foreign trade policy. There is, of course, areas such as benefits to MSMEs in terms of reduced fees, which is typically something which we see across jurisdictions. Substantially reduced fees for various foreign trade schemes that are actually put in place for MSMEs, preferential terms in terms of trade for reduced examination or faster clearances and other benefits for MSMEs under several programs of the foreign trade policy. There are also certain exemptions that have been granted to MSMEs. There's another interesting feature in the policy which links to both MSMEs and also to the e-commerce export component. The government has envisaged the post offices, or what we call in India, the Dak Ghar. So there's something called the Dak Ghar Niryat Kendras, that is the when post offices will act as centers for exports that will enable MSMEs to reach the international market. So again, another facilitation component that has been built into the foreign trade policy, which will have significant benefits in easing access to trade channels. So these are some of the aspects which are relevant from to address your points in relation to the grassroots level exports that the foreign trade policy seeks to promote.
The current FTP also has some new focus areas, such as promoting cross-border trade in digital economy, expanding the list of green technology products, and also streamlining licensing procedures. What are the likely implications of these changes?
As far as the digital economy part of it is concerned, we just discussed in terms of the various facilitative schemes, the e-commerce export hubs that are going to be put in place, and the capacity building, enhancing access. Those are some of the features of the components of the FTP relating to the cross-border trade in digital economy. The other point that you mentioned is in relation to green tech. Now, green technology products have always found a place within our FTP. What the new FTP does is to enhance this list. So, for example, some of the new green tech products that have been included in the list are green hydrogen, battery-operated vehicles, given the enhanced focus on electric vehicles. There is also a component on vertical farming equipment. Another new category is wastewater treatment and recycling, rainwater harvesting systems. These are some of the new elements that have found place within the FTP. But other than that, there are several other items which remain from the previous FTP, which include the equipment relating to solar energy, wind energy. This is something which has always been part of the FTP and continue being there in terms of favorable terms of trade. And yes, I think this ties in well with the overall vision for economic growth in terms of, what are the type of products which will need greater focus in terms of access to the trade channels as an enabler for economic growth as a whole.
From an inclusivity perspective, does the new FTP provide an opportunity for greater participation of all sections of the society, including women in trade?
Well, gender and women doesn't have a specific mention in the foreign trade policy. But as I mentioned, the focus is really more on decentralized development. So perhaps one could imagine a special incentives and greater empowerment in terms of capacity building, credit facilities, which potentially could find a place in, say, the district export action plan or the state export action plan. But as a component of the FTP itself, there are no specific benefits as far as women are concerned. But when you say in terms of overall inclusivity, from a complete gender-neutral perspective, yes, to the extent that it has, as I mentioned, one of the key features is this entire bottom-up kind of an approach, which is something refreshing and which is something to really look forward to in terms of how it actually plays out. And within that overall decentralized mechanism, a more specific focus on gender inclusivity, there is certainly space for that to further develop.
Finally, what is your assessment of the FTP in addressing not only India's economic concerns, but also its larger geoeconomic ambitions?
Before I come to that, Amita, I think one of the other, you know, in terms of key features of the FTP, there are a couple of features that I wanted to reflect on before I come to, you know, the overall vision in terms of trade and development. One of the aspects is in relation to what we, in terms of simplification, is in relation to what we call the SCOMIT list. Now, SCOMIT is an acronym for Special Chemicals, Organisms, Materials, Equipment, and Technology. Again, this has been part of our FTP for several years now. It essentially, you know, SCOMIT essentially refers to dual-use items, including software and technology. When I say dual use, it means it has the potential for both civilian and industrial application as well as potential use in weapons for mass destruction. Now, a SCOMIT list is typically pursuant to obligations under various international treaties and conventions. So, India, along with most other countries in the world, is a member of, say, the Biological Weapons Convention, the Chemical Weapons Convention, the MTCR, that is the Missile Technology Control Regime. Then there is the Wassenaar Agreement on Export Controls. The SCOMIT list is essentially deriving from the various obligations that are pursuant to these. SCOMIT has been a part of FTP, but typically the evolution of SCOMIT in the last few years has been through separate notifications. So there's kind of been a spread out kind of a regime. So from a business perspective, to get it all in one place has always been a challenge. And one of the additionalities of the new FTP is to have a simplified single chapter which actually consolidates everything relating to SCOMIT. There's a dedicated chapter on SCOMIT, which essentially is, I would say, a facilitative feature of the foreign trade policy. Another aspect which also is worth pointing out is, and this is something that the government has also emphasized on, when it introduced the foreign trade policy, is a shift from the existing regime, which has been more in terms of granting subsidies and incentives, and a shift towards more of facilitation of exports themselves. You may also be aware that there was a fairly widespread dispute against several of our export subsidies and incentives at the WTO that the U.S. had initiated. And there was a WTO panel report in 2019 that had held that India's export subsidies, several of them which were part of the FTP, the earlier FTP, were inconsistent with our WTO obligation. So one of the components of this was something called the Merchandise Exports from India Scheme, or the MEIS. Now that, in fact, has been replaced by a scheme which is more focused on remission of duties and taxes on exported products, which is again in sync with what is followed in most other jurisdictions, and it is generally thought to be WTO compatible. This was done in 2021 itself, and now it is being crystallized as part of the foreign trade policy. But interestingly, there are a few other aspects which actually the same WTO dispute had held to be incompatible with our WTO obligations. And this included what is called the Export Promotion Capital Guarantee Scheme, as well as schemes for setting up of export-oriented units, or EOUs, and electronic hardware technology parks, software technology parks, etc. Now, these are schemes which continue. So the only thing that has been, the only component of WTO compatibility that has been addressed is the scheme relating to MEIS, whereas these other schemes relating to EPCG, then to EOUs, then the electronic hardware technology parks, etc., they continue to be part of the foreign trade policy. One possible reason why this has happened is because India has appealed the WTO panel report, so there is no immediate obligation to comply with the WTO panel ruling. But as you would know, most listeners to this podcast would know, there is a dysfunctional dispute settlement system at the WTO as of now, because there is no functional appellate body. There's nobody to hear our appeal. So to that extent, perhaps one of the thoughts in terms of retaining these schemes within our policy is in terms of perhaps waiting for the WTO system to actually be put back in place and continuation of certain policies so as not to create much of disruption in the way trade has occurred so far. But this ties in with what you mentioned in terms of, you know, our overall vision towards foreign trade free trade agreements that we are already entering into, which to a large extent have similar obligations in terms of not having subsidies or incentives which are directly linked or contingent on exports. That is the problematic aspect of some of these schemes. So going forward and going forward with our FTA engagement, I think these are some of the aspects that continue to be reviewed, which will need to be continued to be reviewed for an overall reform in the process. Having said that, I think in terms of the engagement on FTAs, again, it's a matter of fact that after a hiatus of almost 7 to 8 years, India's FTA engagement has substantially increased in the last few years. We've had agreements concluded with Mauritius, with UAE, with Australia. The Australian one is, of course, an interim agreement, and the countries are in the process of negotiating a more full-fledged, a more comprehensive free trade agreement. We are engaged in intensive negotiations with UK and with EU on having free trade agreements, and this is expected to materialize in the next, if not in the next few months, within at least the next year or so. So to a large extent, this provides an interesting time for India's engagement as far as international trade is concerned. India is also part of the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework that has been initiated by the U.S. It is not a typical FTA. In fact, India has stayed out of the trade pillar. But India is an integral part of what we call the supply chain pillar of the IPEF, which essentially will have tremendous implications for the manner in which goods are accessed, so export, import, supply chain related consistencies and certainties will necessarily be impacted by our involvement in the supply chain pillar of the IPEF. And of course, it remains to be seen how IPEF itself materializes in terms of a new strategic vision for engagement of countries in the economic sphere. This coupled with, I think, the last point that I want to focus and highlight on, I mean, one of the achievements and I would say a pointer in the foreign trade policy itself, and this is on the internationalization of the rupee. The FTP for the first time has talked about export proceeds being realized in freely freely convertible currency or in Indian rupees. And that FTP schemes and incentives will be applicable for trade realization in rupees. Now, again, the vision behind this is to make the rupee a global currency. And this move, in fact, one finds genesis for this last year itself when the RBI, the Reserve Bank of India, had made a statement that the internationalization of the rupee is inevitable. And then it put in place a mechanism for settlement of international settlement in rupees. And we've already commenced trade with Russia, where the settlement has been in rupees. Interestingly, there was a short study by the Federation of Indian Export Organizations, which had estimated that the rupee trade system could potentially generate almost $5 billion in exports to Russia in a year's time. So this again remains to be seen, but there is a fair amount of buzz and excitement in terms of how this particular initiative under the FTP could help countries facing currency failure or have dollar shortages. So this is again something which is a new feature of the policy which is worth looking forward to.
Thank you so much, Anuradha, for the comprehensive analysis. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates on social media. We're on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.